Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and today our guest, back with us once again, Tova Martin. She's the author of many gardening books, and we'll talk to her about creating and caring for terrariums, and we'll take your other gardening questions as well as we move along today. So, first, what do you want to know about terrariums? Are you having problems with the one you already have? You have some plant recommendations you'd like to get from Tova? Join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Tova Martin, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Larry. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. Do you have some terrariums?
I do. You know, terrariums are such a good idea. They're such an easy way for people to grow plants indoors, even though they might not have, you know, they might have a dry house. They might run the heat a lot, especially in the winter, and their house might be very dry, and it might be difficult for them to grow house plants. But terrariums make it possible.
So is that why they're become popular again, do you think?
I think they've become popular because they're beautiful, Larry.
Yeah. Yeah,
they really are. You know, if you plant a terrarium, large or small, it's a work of art. It really is. It's like having an art piece in your home.
Yeah, I think you're right. And there are different types of terrariums. Maybe how would you define a terrarium for those who are not familiar with them?
You know, I'm fairly liberal about how I define a terrarium. I sort of think of it as anything that's encased in glass, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be covered. You know, it doesn't have to be a closed environment. It could be a jar. It could be anything. How's this? It could be anything from a mason jar to a big fish tank.
And I've seen them. I've seen both types, and they both can be beautiful. There's no doubt about it. But there can be some problems with them. How do you keep a terrarium going?
You know, it starts with planting it correctly. If you plant it correctly, and if you use the right plants. So let's start with planting correctly. What do you think?
Sounds like a plan to me.
Okay. All right. So what you want to start with is you want to start with the right layers underneath the plants. So I put in a layer, my first layer on the bottom is a layer of pebbles. That would be, you know, like 3/8 of an inch pebbles, pea stone, like you get
yeah.
for your driveway or something.
Sure.
You know? You can pick it up anywhere. And then I mix that with horticultural charcoal. So that's little bits of charcoal. They sell it also in aquarium stores sometimes. You can get them at most garden centers. You don't want to use charcoal briquettes or anything like that. But so you mix that together, and that's about an inch or two on the bottom, depending on the size of the terrarium. And that's your first layer. And then you put in a layer of soil, maybe 2.5-3 inches, depending upon, again, the size of the plants you're putting in. And the soil should be good potting soil that's well-drained. You know, every region has its own brands of soil, but any soil that is well-drained is good. And then you plant the plants in. And the trick, Larry, to making this work is you need to really, really firm the plants in the soil.
Mm.
You know, it's just like planting a plant outdoors. You
sure.
wouldn't just put it, like, drop it into a hole and not fill it in, you know, and tamp it down. So it's the same in a terrarium. You need to really, and this is where I find in my workshops that people go wrong so often. You really, you know, you want to firm around, and if it's hard to get your hands in there, what I do is I take a cork from a wine bottle,
yeah,
and I put it on a skewer, like a shish kebab skewer, you know?
Oh, sure.
And I just use that to tamp it down, because that's a long stick with a foot on the end.
So,
and it works like a charm.
So you don't pack down the soil beforehand.
You firm it down a little bit.
Little bit, okay.
You firm it down a little bit so it isn't too
loose.
It isn't too loose. Because what you want to do, you don't want to have a whole lot of air around the roots. Just like soil outside.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the container itself, as you said, you can use just about any glass container.
You can use any glass container. There is a difference between caring for ones that have lids on the top that are totally closed and ones that are open at the top. And the difference is watering.
Yeah.
So let's go over it, because you know, Larry, a terrarium tells you when it needs to be watered. It actually lets you know. It tells you. So here's how you know. You take the lid off to see if you need to water it, right?
Yeah.
And then first you take the lid off, you plant it, then you put the lid on, and you wait a week or two, right?
Yeah.
And then you check it again. And what you want to do is you want to take it and you want to look, take the lid off, put it back on again, and see if there is condensation on the glass. If there's condensation, it's still moist enough. You don't need to water it more. If there's no condensation, you need to water it. And when you water a terrarium, you want to do it just lightly. Remember, you can't take water out of it. That's difficult because there's no drainage hole. So you just want to water it slightly. But that layer that you put on the bottom of the pea stone and the charcoal, that acts as a filter. So what happens in a terrarium is that the water that you put in when you first water it, that circulates around and it becomes a little biosphere.
Yeah.
So that's how you take care of them.
See, as you were talking about the water, I was thinking about certain plants. I mean, a succulent. Succulents are nice, I think, in open terrariums, but they wouldn't work well in a closed one because there's probably too much moisture for them.
You have so hit it that nail on the head.
Well, good.
You just threaded that needle. That's exactly the issue, and I think that's where a lot of people go wrong, is they try to work succulents and cacti and things like that don't need that environment. So let's just talk a minute about the plants that like to live in a terrarium.
All right.
Okay, they would be plants that like low light, because you don't want to put a terrarium in the sun. It would be like parking your car in the, you know.
Yeah, the wrong spot with no shade.
With the windows shut, exactly. Exactly. You don't, it would fry those poor little plants. So what you want to do is you want to choose plants that like low light, that will stay small, right?
Yeah.
And that also the, let's see, what else? Low light, stay small, and don't, you know, don't mind water being water, moisture.
Yep.
A moist environment. Because the environment will, you know, is bound to stay moist. Even if you have an open terrarium, it's going to be a little bit moister than, you know, a plant just growing in a window. So I suggest that people steer clear of cacti and succulents.
So what do you like in their
terrarium? Oh, gosh. There's a lot of plants that work. I think the easiest plants are ferns and mosses. They work really, really well in a terrarium. But you could work with creeping fig, or you could do a peperomias, pileas. You could do bromeliads, prayer plants, miniature begonias. Work well. Some orchids, the smaller orchids, work really well in a terrarium. So those are all options for you.
Very good tips here from our guest today, Tova Martin, who has been with us many times to talk about a whole variety of plant problems and plant issues and plant good things, too. She's a perennial heirloom vegetable and cottage gardeners, accredited as an organic land care professional. It's always great to have her come by. Questions for her. We're talking terrariums now. We could take other questions as well. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Tova Martin. And we're talking, started talking about terrariums, and we're continuing to do that, but we'll take other questions as well. I'm sure there'll be some houseplant questions along the way here. The number's 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@WPR.org. One more question about watering before we go to the phones, Tova. Some of these terrariums, I'm thinking about, how do you actually water them? I mean, you can't just pour the water in.
Well, you a spout of a very slender spouted watering can is the way to go. You just open it up and water it. Hopefully. I know way back in the day, remember those terrariums, those bottles that they had with the tiny little top, and you had to water it with, you had to plant it with tweezers and things. I don't even, if I can't get my hand in there, forget it.
Okay. Well, let's take a call. Ruth in Chippewa Falls, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I have a gerber daisy, and it bloomed in the summer, but it takes forever for the flowers to come out. Well, now that it's in the house, the flowers don't come up at all. They just stay down way at the bottom and open up a little bit, and then they're done.
It sounds like you might not have enough light. Any member of that family is going to be a sun lover. Do you have it in the south window, Ruth?
I have it in the south window, and my sister has the same one she got at the same time, and hers blooms and mine doesn't. We're in the same exposure.
Ooh. If you could put it closer to the panes of glass, I'm thinking. I actually was growing them over the summer, and they were blooming to beat the band, but I did notice toward the, you know, as the days began became shorter, they stopped producing buds, just like yours.
Maybe
how about
some
the heat in the house?
it had buds, but the deer came and they ate every bud, even the ones down at the bottom, off. And that's the last time I've seen a flower come out of the leaves.
Oh, that's nasty.
Yeah.
How about the heat in the room, though?
Well, I keep the cool at night, you know, in the low 62, and about 72, 70 in the house.
Yeah, that's warm enough, I would think. But, you know, some plants just need more light to bloom. And your sister sounds like she's having great success.
Well, is your sister having the same problem with deer that you are, Ruth? Because
no,
I'm wondering if all the buds get eaten off.
Well, this was, you know, a while ago, and right now I've got three coming up. And one's turning color, but the one previous one, I ended up cutting off because it was done.
Well, so our days are lengthening. There's hope in sight.
Yeah, there is. Otherwise, artificial light would be the only other option, I would think.
Yeah, you'd have to put it pretty close to the light source, though.
Yeah, you would. Good luck, Ruth. Thank you for calling.
And try rotating that plant, you know, so all sides are getting the benefit of the light, and keep it as close as possible to those light panes.
Good luck. Thank you. Mona in Appleton, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I bought a succulent from Home Depot. It's just one of those little 2-inch pots. I'm going to guess the size. And it's the cutest thing. It just looks like a little alien thing. I don't know, but it's a succulent for sure. I've got it in a southeast window. I keep my house 70 to 72. It's cooler by the window. I'm not putting it right tight to the window. It's doing well so far. I haven't had it long. Just wondering the care. I know being a succulent, it shouldn't be watered a lot. So I'm letting it dry out in between. I'm wondering if I should repot it. Should I use cactus soil? What would be the general care for that?
Mona, you're on the right track with you know, it sounds like you're on the right track with everything there. It actually probably doesn't even need that high heat. In the 60s would probably do it. Your light, keep it as close as possible, and remember to rotate it. On repotting, Mona, I would say try to wait until spring. Most plants don't need repotting in the, you know, in this spate of low light. When you do, you know, first check the root system and make sure that it has filled the container. I always suggest that people check root systems before they just automatically think that a plant needs a promotion. And go only one pot size, especially for the succulents. A cacti and succulent potting soil is the best way to go. It will give you much more drainage than a regular potting soil.
You know, some people might ask, why the heck do they want to be root bound? Why can't you give them a little more extra soil to work around?
Well, that's a really good question,
yeah.
Larry. What I always say is that you can't go from kindergarten to college in one step. You've got to graduate, you know, you've got to graduate slowly. So if you give it too much soil, what happens is that the roots, especially if you've potted in the winter when they're not making a whole lot of root growth, but what happens is the roots are sitting in a lot of soggy soil, and they tend to rot. And that's not just succulents either. That's all plants.
Yeah, any plant. Yeah.
Any plant. Yeah.
Let's see. Do we have Jean in Morley, Iowa? Did we just talk with her? Yeah, we did. Thanks again, Jean, for that question. Appreciate it. Let's go to Kel in Sugar Camp next. Hi, Kel.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I picked up this beautiful glass globe about 10 inches in diameter It's kind of like a vase type of an opening on the top. And I always thought it would be a great terrarium, except that it's got this pale blue-green tint to the glass, kind of like the old Pyrex ware.
Mm.
And I was wondering if that would stop the growth of a plant inside of it.
That's a really good question. That's a really good question. Yeah, if you got tinted glass, it is going to cut off the light, and it will diminish what you can grow in that terrarium. I think you should probably, in that case, stick to ferns and mosses, really. Tinted glass is again, going to really cut off. If it's like Coke glass, that's probably too dark. But if it's just lightly tinted, you can probably do it.
Okay. It does kind of remind me, when you're thinking about terrariums, and I've seen a few that were kind of, dusty, not as clean as they might have been, and that would make the same kind of problems if it's dusty or whatever in terms of cutting the light back.
Yeah, and there's usually condensation on the glass. That's just the nature of the beast, really, Larry. So you've got a really good point there that I suggest to people that they take a tissue or something like that or and just wipe off the glass inside and outside every once in a while. All these things are big advertisements for being able to get your hand in if you can, you know.
Oh, you can join in, too, with your own questions. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Carla in Fox Lake, you did mention some plants that work well, but she wonders if you could go over even a little more detail about the types of plants that work in a terrarium and add some more types of plants.
Sure. You know, one thing that I love to work with, and this is a little different, I know, than most people, but it's fun, and that's I like to, in general, Larry knows that I'm a big proponent of bringing like the garden, the sense of a garden indoors. So I actually sometimes make little outdoor plants and put them in little terrariums, things like ajugas and violets and heucheras, low-light plants that stay small. I work with miniature hostas, you know, those adorable little miniature hostas. And I brought them, in and planted them in terrariums, and they just love it. They, and I have like a little mini garden that I can look at that, you know, my nieces and nephews just love it.
That sounds absolutely wonderful. I had never thought about a hosta inside.
Yeah, they do. When I bought it and I told the nurseryman that I was buying it, and they said it would go dormant. Well, it didn't. It didn't go dormant. It was just lovely throughout the winter. And I said violets, but I should also say that African violets also work. But one thing that you all need to pay attention to is that if you've got a flowering plant, you need to be very careful when a flower finishes to whisk it away immediately before it rots. Any type of rot, any type of thing like that, when something, begins to go by, you need to take it away before it spreads problems.
Linda and Nina has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I have a very uneducated question. I need to know when it is truly appropriate to start flower seeds and vegetable seeds, because I see people starting them in January. I see people starting them in March. I've had people tell me April, but then whenever I start them, I'm always, my vegetables are always seem to be a month off from everybody else. And I'd like to know, when are you supposed to really start this stuff?
Well, I might ask Larry to chime in also, but when I start them, now I'm in New England, but I start, and it's the cold part of New England, but I wait. I don't see any point in starting them when the light levels are low because I don't use a whole lot of artificial light. I just put them in windows, so I find that they just catch up, you know? So I start in, I don't plant anything until like March, and then I just do the snapdragons in the long season. I look at the packet, and I see the amount of time that you should sow it before the frost date, and every seed packet should have that information on it or go to the website of, you know, and check it out. But they almost always tell you how many days before the last, or weeks, usually weeks, before the last frost that you should plant. And I wait for most things until April because then I can get more light and they just catch up.
They
you know?
Do. They do.
Well, don't you find that, Larry?
Yeah, and your point about, I was going to bring that up too, your point about the seed packet and checking that information is I think really useful, to be perfectly honest.
Really useful. They tell you, you know, it depends on how long they each seed takes to germinate. So it's a little bit individual. But can I just circle around and connect this to terrariums for a minute?
Absolutely.
I actually use my terrariums to start some of my seeds that like high humidity, like foxgloves. My foxgloves love the terrariums. And then I'm not hovering over them with one of those spray, you know.
Yeah.
It just makes it so much easier.
I hadn't thought of that. That's a great idea.
Oh, it's so helpful.
Linda, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too. We have open lines to get you on pretty quickly. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Gene in Morley, Iowa, called to ask if broccoli and cauliflower should be planted inside first or directly into the ground.
You know, I start almost everything indoors first because it's just easier to transplant, I find, in the garden. So I start my broccoli and my cauliflower and cabbages, all members of the cabbage family indoors first, and then I plant them outside later on. I think maybe kohlrabi is the only member of that family I can think of that I direct sow. Larry, what's your wisdom on that?
Yeah, I think it's a very good idea. It helps. I mean, you seem to get a little more success when you do it that way.
And you don't waste as many seeds because you're not thinning it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a question. You know, we've been talking about seeds and so forth, but it reminded me as well about bulbs. And, you know, every time I do the show, practically, I'll get somebody who calls and says, well, I didn't get the bulbs in the ground last fall. That I bought inexpensively at the garden center. And I think a good thing to do is to force some of those bulbs. If they're healthy bulbs, healthy enough, why not try forcing them? Maybe you could talk a bit about forcing bulbs at this time of the year.
I love to force bulbs. It's so much fun, and you get a little spring preview. what you can do with those. Hopefully you've kept them refrigerated because I think that's important. But what I do is I put them in, I plant them actually in the soil, just like I'd plant anything. I just cover the bulb over with soil. I don't bury them as deep as you would have to in the garden. And then I put them in the refrigerator and plant it like that in the pot, cover them over with you know, aluminum foil or something, and put them in the refrigerator. And I wait until I start to see a little bit of growth. It usually depends on the bulb. Sometimes it takes 4 to 6 weeks or so, maybe even longer, 8 weeks or so for the tulips. And then I bring them out, and they've made little, you can just see them, their little noses.
Yeah.
Let me out. Their little noses sticking up out of the soil, and then you bring them out into a sunny window, and you have a little spring preview in containers in your windowsill.
I love that, though. It's always so much fun to have them have that kind of the first variety of color in your home in the spring.
It's worth that one little pot is worth 100. Don't you think?
Yes. It's fun. Julie in White Lake, we'll go to you. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Tova. I have a question about, it's a generic question about average rain a week that's good for a raised bed garden. We have a pollinator garden in Antigo. I can't give you the exact dimensions. It's probably 24 feet long and...
Wow.
10, each wing is probably 10 feet wide, so
wow.
It's probably 20 by 24, but and about 2.5 feet tall. But what we need to know is an average, we're trying to establish a way of watering that's fair to everybody. We don't live equally close to the garden, and we want to set it up so that we each can take care of it and take care of it without ruining our shoulders. There's no water there. There's a watering faucet at Johnson Coil that owns the land.
And your
so,
bed there would
am
be...
Am I right that it's full sun?
Yes, it's full sun, yes. Mm.
And
what
it's
were you
on a
say,
sandy
Len?
Bed. I was just going to say, Antigo, what's the soil that's under the raised bed?
There's a berm, too, and the berm is probably the silt loam, the Antigo silt loam, but
okay.
The berm, the butterfly-shaped garden is purchased soil, and it's probably the soil that we can get at Fleet Farm or Menards that's bagged.
Okay.
Mm. What do you say, Laura? I say an inch, but what would
yeah,
you say? An inch of rain.
An inch a week is, you know, it's standard for, you know, if you don't have a raised bed, an inch a week, and I think you're not going to get... leaching out of the water or any drainage issues. So I'd say an inch a week. And that would be, you know, you have to know how much it rained.
And, you know, in a raised bed with the sides, you wouldn't have to really worry about runoff from a heavy rain, would you, Larry?
No. Shouldn't it anyway. And Julie is in talking about Antigo silt loam, and Tova, you probably don't know this, but we have state birds and, you know, state animal, and we've got a state soil, and Antigo silt loam is our state soil.
Wow, that's what a progressive state.
Yeah, there was a professor at the University of Wisconsin in soil science, and he was a wonderful guy, and he got his classes and a whole bunch of people together to go after the legislature to make that the Antigo silt loam as the state soil.
Every state should have a state soil.
Julie, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Chris and Waupun, on to you now. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I got a question for you. I tried to get some Boston ivy. I got some seeds for it this summer, and I had a hard time getting them to germinate. I mean, I thought once that stuff starts to grow, it just really takes off. But what did I do wrong?
Well, I never grew an ivy from seed. I never have. I always do cuttings. I don't know what to tell you as far as what a seed would need to germinate. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I
have you
no
Mary?
I no. I've never of course I've never done it.
Well, I think what you need to do is you need to befriend somebody with an ivy plant and ask for a little cutting, because you know there's usually plenty of cuttings, and the roots come off the stem of the plant, so it's very, very easy to root.
Yeah, it is indeed. Chris, good luck. Thank you. Lois in Chippewa Falls, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a clivia. I've had it for years. It blooms and everything, but it has its roots want to go up the trunk and through the leaves. It wants to go up. And I actually cut them off with a razor blade. I pull them off. I don't know. I don't know why. I've transplanted it. So do you have any clues?
Well, first of all, the thing about them is, and a lot of those bulb type, you know, plants, they like to be pot bound. They really do. They bloom better when the roots are snug in the pot. That's not to say that they should be in the same container forever, but it's something to remember that people think they're taking such good care of their inherited clivias, and the fact is that they, you know, they'll stop blooming because they haven't, they like to be pot bound. But those roots, some of them do make sort of like adventitious roots that come off the higher up. But in general, you can just cut those off. You know, unless they're like coming out of the pot, they're not coming out from below the soil, are they?
They're above the soil, and they actually come through some of the leaves occasionally. But I cut them back with a razor blade, you know.
Are you sure yet? Well, you must be sure it's clivia.
Sure. And I've had it so ripped on that there's not even a spot of dirt, so... Yeah, but I'm sure it has dirt in it now. But, yeah, it's done it more than once, and it does bloom every year.
Yeah. Well, any roots above the soil are not really needed, you know. How to stop that from happening, I'm not sure. It's unique.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that either. Lois, I guess, so you take them off, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I mean, I assume there's also roots below the soil.
Oh, yeah. There's
that are anchoring it down. So those are the ones that you really need to focus on.
Thanks, Lois, for calling. You can join in, too. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. I'm Larry Mueller. Our guest, Tova Martin, author of many gardening books and a horticulture industry veteran, a speaker and trainer. It's always fun to have her with us, and I hope you'll join in. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Tova Martin. Always great to have her come by. And today we started talking about terrariums, but we're taking all kinds of other plant questions as well. And I hope you'll join in. Number to call,
642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Dave emailed the question. His precious little peperomia survived a car trip from Boston last fall, but dropped all but its top leaf. This happened when they put up their Christmas tree and they had to move all their houseplants, and he thinks this one got too close to a window and got a chill. Wondering if it'll survive. It has little green nubbins at each leaf junction, and the terminal tip looks like it's alive, but no activity since the drop of 3 weeks ago.
Peperomias are really easy. So I'm thinking that plant's going to forgive him for anything. And it sounds like it's well on the way to recovery. It shouldn't have gotten, unless it was super cold, it shouldn't have gotten nipped by, you know, being a little too close to the wind, you know, cold window. But just in case, you know, wise, might as well be wise than sorry. Keep it a little further, you know, further away from the window in the future. There are some members of the family that are a little bit, maybe a little more finicky than others. So, but that new growth sounds very, very promising.
I agree, and it's only been 3 weeks, so it's actually pretty good to be getting those little green nubbins at the leaf junctions, for sure. So I'd hang on there, Dave. It's going to happen. You can join in, too. Again, 800-642-1234, or you could email the email address ideas@wpr.org. Let's take another call. Karen in Washburn. It's your turn. Hi, Karen. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Hey, I just wanted to offer some advice for the person that called in about the pollinator garden. We have pretty much the exact same situation here up near Lake Superior on a pollinator garden we put in, and we don't have a water source nearby. We have to carry water from the lake, but I think the whole point of pollinator gardens is that you don't have to do much care once they get established. When you're first trying to establish them, then it's like any other garden. You have to water pretty often to get the plants established. But once they're established, I don't ever water, which is kind of nice. I mean, your plants kind of adjust. We're in the fourth year now, and they kind of move around, and some do better than others, and some have died out, but others have really flourished and moved around, and so, it just fills in, and you shouldn't have to take care of it much.
Yeah.
It's really a lovely thing.
Yeah, it is indeed. A comment, Toma?
That's, Karen, that is such wise advice, and sometimes we lose sight of that benefit, that when you grow, you know, native or you know, local plants that are suited to your area, they really are much less maintenance. They're made for that environment. So they work with their pollinators, et cetera, to you get the best benefits out of them, but you also have to put the least work into it.
Yeah, and I kind of had it in my head with that first caller that it was a start, you know, sort of a startup, but and so that's where I was thinking on the inch of water. Mm. You know, so I may have certainly been incorrect, but Karen is certainly correct that the locally, you know, plants that are local to your area are probably going to be fine. Yeah.
They like that Wisconsin state soil.
They had to go so low.
They're gonna perform in it, and it's what they're made for, and and she's so right that when you establish a garden correctly, it should be on autopilot after that.
Yeah.
And by the way, somebody asked who was the professor that got forwarded antigo silt loam, and that professor's name was Francis Hole, which I thought was kind of a cool name for a soils guy to have Hole as the last name. And he was a great lecturer. I think I've mentioned on the show before, but he would lecture and bring his violin with him.
Oh, my goodness.
And he'd say, well, this is what sandy soil sounds like. And he'd play a little, and this is what antigo silt loam sounds like. And his lectures, many, many people, other professors included, would often go just to hear his lectures.
Yeah. We had here in Connecticut, we had a somebody on in our state in the experiment station, and I loved his name. He was Bob White.
Oh, yeah. Excellent names there. Francis, I actually live, my house is just a couple of blocks from where his home, and there's a little plaque outside his home that commemorates his life in our neighborhood. This is pretty cool. Todd and Racine, on to you now. Hi, Todd.
Yeah, hey. I was curious. So I have a new greenhouse that I just built, and it's now heated. And I had a lime tree that was in a different greenhouse. I moved it in there and noticed it had some mites. I think they were like red spider mites. And so it wasn't horribly infested, but it didn't look completely healthy. And I ended up spraying it with horticultural oil about a month ago. It hasn't been extremely hot or sunny since, but it pretty much has lost all those leaves now. And I wonder if I did something wrong, or is it going to bounce back, and is there anything I can do to help it in the meantime?
We get an opportunity to talk about Larry's limey. I was going to check in about limey.
Well, I tell you, I think in Todd's case, have you been, I fertilize right through the year. Have you been putting in fertilizer a little bit with every watering?
Not, well, like I said, it was at a different greenhouse where someone was sort of taking care of it for me, sort of a group. And then I brought it over and I did fertilize it with some sort of, you know, organic fish emulsion, very low.
Right, that's what you'd want.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what you'd want. I've had limey had lost a bunch of leaves, but I think sometimes plants want to grow a different kind of leaf depending on the light conditions, and so they'll drop a bunch of leaves and then they'll produce new ones.
Good point.
And the new ones are more adept at gathering the light or whatever conditions that occur. So I guess I'd hang on with it, Todd. And if it was me, I'd keep hanging on with it, especially if you got rid of the spider mites.
Todd, have you... the thing about going organic is that you do have to often spray more than once. Because you're not, you're kind of going through the life cycle of that insect. And there might be eggs, et cetera.
Yeah, and the oil itself, would that could have created a little barrier that the leaves didn't like, too. Isn't that right, Tova?
It is. Good point. Yeah. I know that... I don't think that the ferns like the horticultural oils much. They just don't like oils on their leaves. But the, you know, you now it's free of the insects, which would have wreaked havoc anyway. A lot of plants, it's a really good point that when you move them, I know camellias sometimes drop leaves. Hibiscus often drop leaves when you move them from outdoors to inside, et cetera. And what temperature would you say your greenhouse is, Todd?
I'd say on average 50, I try to keep it at 50. When it got really cold, I had to supplement a little more heat. But, yeah, I try to keep it between 45 and 55. And then if it's warm out, I mean, if it's sunny, it gets pretty darn warm, even when it's cold.
Yeah. But
still a little cool.
Yeah, exactly. The citrus, actually, Larry was the one that got me fertilizing my citrus throughout the winter because they are very hungry plants. They're the hungriest plants I've ever grown.
And they like warm. they like it a bit warmer, I think, than 50 degrees. Well, I tell you what, Todd, thank you so much for calling. Hang on there. I think that lime tree will come back. Tova Martin, our guest, author of a number of gardening books. Take a look at them. They're fun and well-written. Horticulture industry veteran, speaker and trainer, our guest this week for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Our guest today on Garden Talk can answer your questions about houseplants and outdoor plants. Tova Martin back with us. She's a perennial heirloom vegetable and cottage gardener and is accredited as an organic land care professional. She's the author of many gardening books, including her latest, The Garden in Every Sense and Season. So, plant questions for her, I hope you'll give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Tova, your book, The Garden in Every Sense and Season, how's that done?
Oh, it's done really well. As a matter of fact, it won, thank you for asking, it won the Garden of the Book of the Year, a gold medal from the GardenCom group. So that was a lot of fun. And and the fun part about it is that it's really about sort of awakening to the stimuli of your garden, being aware of the senses as you go through your garden. So, Larry, it's really sort of been an ongoing odyssey. once I plugged in my senses and began to feel and hear things in the garden, I learned more things about gardening.
I think you're absolutely right, and I'm glad to know the book. It's a great book. I'm glad to know that it's doing well. Do you get the chance to go out and talk to people much about it?
I do. I lecture a lot. As a matter of fact, I've lectured via Zoom in Wisconsin. Just last fall, I was lecturing via Zoom in Wisconsin, so that was awfully fun. And I think it was some Wisconsin Master Gardeners.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of fun there. And, you know, every time I go out and lecture or via Zoom or when I lecture live, I always learn from my audiences. And so it becomes then I bring that knowledge to other audiences. And it's really a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. And talking to our Wisconsin Master Gardeners Association members, you have a pretty knowledgeable group.
Absolutely.
They are really a sharp bunch. Are you working on any gardening projects right now, by the way?
Well, I'm always working on gardening projects, but I'm probably starting a new book. I've definitely trying to start on, more on houseplants. But, you know, there's so much to learn, and there's so many people to work with. And, you know, I'm so lucky. I write a lot of magazine articles, and I link with garden designers and landscape architects all over the country, and I always learn from them. So I bring those things into my garden, my own garden, you know, what I've learned. And sometimes it's just the concept, you know, of something I'll learn about planting and interplanting and plants that work together, well together. And I've begun to do a new lecture, which is really fun, on plant communities and how plants work together beautifully and in synchronization with pollinators. And it's really been a fun project.
How do people, you know, let's say, I know you do have done a number of Zoom calls, but how do people know how to learn when you're going to be speaking or where you're going to be speaking?
Well, go on my website, which is tovamartin.com. That's TOVAHMARTIN.com, tovamartin.com. And it's got all my lectures up there and where, you know, who I'm giving them to. And it really is all over the country, so it's so much fun. Next week I'm lecturing in Ohio, and I'm lecturing in Illinois, and I'm lecturing, but via Zoom, I'm lecturing in Maine. So it's really fun to, I always take, even via Zoom, we chat beforehand and afterwards. And it's really fun to link and learn from my audience, too.
It really is a lot of fun. I should plug our Wisconsin, PBS Wisconsin Annual Garden Expo, which is coming up February 10th through the 12th. And I'll be at that expo on the Saturday, which I think is the 11th, in the morning, with Lisa Johnson and Brian Huddleston, and we'll be doing a little presentation. It's always a lot of fun, and usually there are 250, 300 people. The room is usually packed.
Wow.
And it's a lot of fun to get out, isn't it? And you do learn a lot from, you know, in conversations with those who attend.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I love Zoom because I can easily be all over the country. But when, you know, we were able to lecture again live, I realized that how much I missed it.
I know what you mean. You should come out to our garden expo sometime. What I tell you, it is the greatest time of the year in Wisconsin to have a garden expo in February when it's typically cold outside, and you go in and here's all these plants and these people and other people that are interested in the same things you are, and lots of things to buy, everything from tools to plants, and it's just a lot of fun.
Well, I always say that you know, I do have a soft spot for my Wisconsin, you know, friends, garden friends. And I really feel that you folks are some of the most knowledgeable garden audiences I've ever either lectured to or talked on the radio with. The questions that I get are so well thought out and knowledgeable. And you, I know you treasure your houseplants for good reason.
Well, I tell you, let's take a phone call on that note. Again, the number is 800-642-1234. Kara in Findlay, Minnesota, with something for us. Hi, Kara.
Hi. Yeah. In fact, I was looking up old shows of yours trying to find help for my Christmas cactus, and I had come across Ms. Martin's name, and I have my, which was my grandmother's and then my mother's and now my Christmas cactus, and it is slowly dying. Mm. And I've tried everything, and I've researched everything. In fact, I was going to email her, Ms. Martin, about it. Like, mine is destructible. Mine is slowly dying, and I don't know what. And I even contacted our local, the UMD in Duluth, to ask them about what if they could help me, and he came and even looked at it, and he's like, I think it's fine, I think it's just going through a process. And I'm like, yeah, it's still dying.
Well, what does it look like? How do you know it's passing away here, Kara?
I don't know if you call them leaves or segments. I call them segments. Mm-hmm. And they just start getting yellow and just then dying off, and then the next one gets yellow and dies off. And it's been doing that for a little over a year now. And I've even tried thinking it was some kind of issue, like a fungus or something. And so I tried plucking off down to a healthier looking segment. And then it just keeps continuing on. And I've tried top watering it and then letting it dry out and then bottom watering it. The biologist from UMD looked at it and said, you know, he didn't see any fungus or any kind of pests or anything. He thought it looked better than what he was anticipating seeing, but it just said it still is doing it. And I've tried fertilizer, and of course, it, you know, because it was my grandmother's and then my mom's and now mine, I would really, it's an old plant. I would really hate for it to die on my watch.
Yeah.
Well, Kara, I think, you know, a lot of people who inherit plants, I think they feel a heavy burden of responsibility.
Yes.
I really do. It's difficult to inherit a plant, and you are giving it a different environment than the one, you know, we were just talking earlier about how plants, you know, when they're moved, they actually often react to that. But let's just kind of go through a little bit of what Christmas cacti like. But I'm going to ask you first off, because this is where a lot of people do go wrong, is have you repotted it?
I did repot it when it first started.
Okay.
Like a cactus mix.
Mm-hmm.
And it had been in my mom's window that was west facing, and mm-hmm. then it was in our basement that was west facing, and it seemed to like it, but that's when it started, in our basement. So then I brought it upstairs and brought it away from direct sunlight, and it continued, and then I put it in direct sunlight thinking maybe it wanted more sun. And it's still continued, and it just doesn't seem like, no matter what I do, it doesn't have root rot. I know that for sure. So it just doesn't seem like, no matter what I do, it's not thriving like I would like it to be.
When you repotted it, how large was the container that you, you know, relative to the original container?
I just kept the original container. I just gave it new potting soil.
I see. So you shook out some of the old soil and filled in with new soil.
Right, right.
Okay.
I wanted to check the roots because I was afraid. That's when I started researching, and I thought, well, maybe it's got root rot. And then when I did that, it's like, no, the roots look good. So I thought, well, I've already got it taken apart. I might as well give it fresh, you know, fresh potting soil. And
yeah.
That's when I did it. So that was about a year ago, a little over a year ago, roughly.
And
a year.
The soil looked like, you know, it was a cacti and succulent soil that you bought.
Yeah, off of I hate to say it, but Amazon, and it was just, it had all the, you know, it had lots of really good reviews from people that had cactus plants and succulent plants. So I felt pretty confident buying it. The only thing that the biologist did say was he said that he would take that mixture and add in more sand.
Add more sand?
Hmm.
Hmm. I'm worried, a little concerned about the, you know, a basement situation usually is not enough light for a member of the cactus and succulent family. So, you know, your issues might have started then. But I'm thinking, you know, put it as close as you can to a light source. Give it as bright light as you possibly can. But in the summer, that said, I find that members of that family, of the Christmas cacti group, do not like too bright light outdoors. You would not want to give it like full sun outdoors. They just don't seem to like that for some reason. But indoors, they can, you know, they do need, and especially during the winter, they do need good light. Rotate it. What about fertilizer? What's happening with that?
It was a fertilizer mix that I bought that was Miracle Grow. I'm driving right now, so I can't tell you what's exactly in it, but it was supposed to be for succulents and, mm-hmm. and cactus. So, and I did that according to their directions, and he's like, you could maybe even give it a little bit more because it's, you know, whatever he said, the levels were, he's like, it could tolerate a little more actually, but that was about it. And it is in a south-facing patio door window now.
Okay.
So
on the fertilizer, I personally, besides my limey, I don't fertilize during the winter. I find that, and cacti and succulents do not really need much fertilizer.
No.
In general. They're just adapted to very lean, mean environment, you know.
I was thinking maybe we were watering it too much, although Kara mm-hmm. said that the roots weren't problematic at all. We could do cuttings of that, couldn't we?
Yes, they're very easy to root from.
Yeah,
you might want to root some just as security.
I would do that. I would root some, Kara.
That's a really good idea.
I wish we had more to tell you, but they don't mine in my office. My other office, it got very little attention. But it was always dark at night and light in the day. It was a little cooler at night there than it was in the daytime, and it always thrived.
Well, that's a good point, Larry, that a lot of plants really need that that change in temperature from day to night. Begonias especially need like a little bit of a, you know, change in temperature. 5 degrees or so difference between day and night. I have found that my friends in Arizona, for example, had trouble when they did climate control, their plants in climate control situations that stayed stable.
Yeah. Well, my Christmas cactus is an absolutely gorgeous cactus, and it thrived, and the dark at night, I don't know if that made a difference or not, but everything, all the lights were off.
Well, another good point, because they definitely are do bloom at certain seasons of the year, so that sort of thing, those cues are important to them.
Yeah. Kara, that's what we got for you. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Make some cuttings, though, for sure. Marion St. Nazians. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me on the show, taking my call. I was wondering about how you maintain a fuchsia through winter. I have had some success so far. It seems to be doing well, but I was wondering if you have any tips for me.
They are a challenge over the winter. To keep them free of insects, that's the issue with fuchsias, that they tend to attract whitefly, especially and red spider mite as issues when over the winter. So what you want to do, they're not really a highlight demanding plant, but they would want at least an east or west window and keep them as close as possible to the window. But they are sensitive to cold, so there's that. You might need to shut the blinds, or et cetera, over the nighttime. They rotate them to give them, even light. And be careful not to overwater, but don't stress the plant, because anytime you stress a plant that's sensitive to insects, that's when it's going to fall victim.
Yeah. Good points. Mary, thanks. Cliff in Appleton, hi.
Hi, Larry, and to your guest. So I go out west to the mountains every year, and this is the third time I've come back, and my gardener and my family didn't take my hibiscus that is 3 feet tall, and it got frozen, and it lost all its leaves, and I pray to it every night that it can come back to life. I've done this 3 times, but now there's no leaves on it, and I don't even see any little sprouts on it that show any life to it. Is there any way that I can bring it back again?
Ooh.
You might want to try and see if it's still alive. Break a little branch or make a little cut and see if there's live tissue. But I don't know. I'm sorry. Tova, go ahead.
Well, dropped leaves on a hibiscus, that doesn't worry me.
No.
Because that happens all the time. But frozen, most hibiscus are not going to be happy about that.
Yeah. You might try a little nick and check and see if there's any live, anything live underneath. But Cliff?
I would cut it way back to...
Yeah, well, then you'll find out if there's live tissue in there. Just cut it way back. Is probably the best thing that you can do. Well, on that unhappy note, Tova, it's always a pleasure. I really look forward to your visits, and thank you so much. I hope you'll do it again.
I had a ball.
It was fun. Tova Martin, our guest. Her latest book is titled The Garden in Every Sense and Season. So you might want to take a look at that. And she has so many other books. Her TovaMartin.com, I believe, is her. Is that right? TovaMartin.com.
And I actually have a book, The New Terrarium. So.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yes, I forgot about that one as well. Thanks, Tova. Oh, man. Well, Jesse LeGrew is going to be back with us on Monday to take your technology-related questions. That's Monday from 11 to 12:30. In the meantime, I hope you have a great weekend, and stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.